I'm Carrie Doan, and welcome to Clearly Connected. You're listening to episode 36. I'm a life coach, business consultant, speaker, and a big-hearted entrepreneur. I live in the colorful city of Cincinnati, Ohio with my family, and through my work, I've helped hundreds of conscious people overcome fear and anxiety so that they can find their way to a connected, more confident way of life in money and relationships. You're enjoying this podcast ad-free because of the generous support of subscribers to Clearly Connected on Spotify. You can learn more at carriedoan.com, where we'll continue the conversation we start here for anyone who wants to move beyond the stress that keeps them stuck. If you struggle with feelings of insecurity, or if you just need a few minutes away from the constant stream of information, well, you're in the right place for finding that safe space of connection. Today's question, how can we tap into the power of vulnerability after years of pain so that we can open our hearts and receive the deepest forms of connection? Listen in. Welcome back, all you beautiful people. Today, I am so excited for this episode because I have the pleasure of interviewing my special guest and friend, Glenn Martin Taylor, about the value of vulnerability, how we can tap into it in our creative process, and the way that it impacts our intimate connection with one another. So before we dive in, I want to introduce my guest and share a little bit about him. Glenn is a self-taught visual ceramic artist in Dayton, Ohio, and his work deals with the dilemma of being human and the mending of the broken. In Glenn's spare time, you'll find him writing poetry, baking bread, or heading to flea markets to search for pieces for his next piece of art. So Glenn, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, this has been a long time coming, I feel like. Well, maybe not that long, but we've talked about it for a minute, and I'm just thrilled to have you here because there's so much wisdom I think you can share with me and our audience. And I love to just kick off the conversation by hearing a little bit about your story, and maybe if you could give us a little context of what got you into the art world in the first place? When was that? Was it some time ago?
Ever since I was a child. My paternal grandfather was sort of a Renaissance man. He was a master photographer, but also he could draw. He did little brass and bronze sculptures that he cast in his basement. He seemed to be talented in so many ways, and I was inspired by him. But he died a year before I was born, so all I ever heard was stories, or I saw his photographs. But growing up, my father was a rather angry religious man, and my mother was rather detached. And by the time I was four, I kind of knew I was going to be on my own, and I began to create my own space. And I began to, whenever I did anything artistic, it just seemed to be such a safe, content place to be. And when I was about 13 or 14, I was at a camp in Colorado, and somebody gave me a book of Van Gogh, and I had no exposure to art. I mean, I had some art classes, obviously, in schools, but I really wasn't exposed or ready to look at art history and art. And somebody gave me a book of Van Gogh, and I was taken. And I began to go to the library and get as many books as I could get on my bike and bring them home and just go through everything. And I went through, you know, I started with Van Gogh and the Post-Impressionists, but then I went back to the Impressionists, and I went back to Turner, and then I went forward into Surrealism and Dada and Cubism and Abstract Expressionist and Minimalist, and I just explored art, and I just drank it up for the next 3 or 4 years, and I read and read and just saw so much. And I knew this is what I was going to be. This is what I was supposed to be. You know, so by the time I was 14 or 15, it's like, yeah, I don't have a choice. But I actually tried Later on in my 20s, I tried to become normal and not be an artist because I thought artists weren't normal. But eventually, yeah, it just never went away. And I kept going back to it, especially in darkness or crisis. I always went back to trying to create something. It just was an urge that I couldn't let go of. So that is how I got to be an artist.
Well, and you said in that that you knew, when was it, around the age of 14, like you knew that's what you were meant to do. How did you know? Was it a visceral feeling? Was it?
I possessed it. It just was there. It was a thing that just, I was like, I guess I had enough creative moments to know that that was, for me, the essence of what I was going to be, or the best moments of my life are going to be creating things. In my normal life, I became a cabinet maker and a master woodworker, and I would do creative studio furniture and build furniture, as well as just make, you know, the standard stuff to make a living. But I could never, I always returned to doing the creativity. It just was, it just aligned my brain in such a way that, and then even in my 30s, while I was still a cabinet maker, I started painting canvases. I painted large abstract expressionist canvases and had some one-man shows. And I could never get rid of it. I could never shed it. Even though I tried to just shut up, Glenn, just make money, be a woodworker and be a family man and just try to be normal. It just kept calling me. And then about 10 or 12 years ago, life kind of crashed and I really turned to it for mending. And I realized that in the making of the art, I began to mend all the pain from childhood and from just being a fucking person, because it's really fucking hard to be a person. Mm-hmm. And so I began to embrace it more, and I began to own it that, yeah, I don't really have a choice anymore. You know, when you kind of hit bottom, you look up and you say, what's left? And all I ever saw that was left for me was artwork and becoming an artist. And so I think I just turned the corner and made the commitment that, all right, fuck being normal. I'm going to just be an artist and be me. And there's no choice. I don't choose to make art. It's what I have to do.
Mm. Well, and that to me, it sounds like your path of authenticity, right? Like, you know, to do anything else would be betraying yourself on some level, or abandoning yourself. And that takes a lot of courage. And so, no.
courage for me is when you just have nothing else to do, nothing else left. There's nothing else to lose. Mm-hmm. It's not being brave. It's just, there's just one door in all that darkness, and you have to go through it. There's no choice. And I don't know if that's brave. It's just, how do I go forward? That was the only way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's a really cool way to look at it. I don't know if everybody would say it the same way, you know.
Yeah, it's okay.
But, gosh, well, and I think this is one of the things that makes your artwork so distinct, is the level of vulnerability with which you display in it. And I think in our conversations, I've concluded that a large part of that is because you are actively processing your pain, or what you said, like the challenge or the dilemma of being human, like the hard stuff comes through in what you create.
Yeah. And I think, it goes back, and a lot of artists will admit that when they were a child, you know, they got labeled being that sensitive child. And so I've always been that sensitive child, and then I was a sensitive man. I just accepted that eventually that I just feel. Mm. I just fucking feel shit. Mm-hmm. And especially the pain and the dilemma of being a human being. It's really hard. Life wears your ass down. Love breaks your heart. Just, it all just beats the fuck out of your soul. And I feel all that. And I didn't really have it. I just had to start. I've always just had to do something with that. And when I aligned my brain into creativity, it eased that pain. And then it explained it to me. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. The art explains to me what the pain is all about, or where it's been hidden, where the corners are in the darkness. And then you pull that shit out and you make more art. And when part of that bravery, you're not giving a fuck. Actually, it's just not giving a fuck anymore. You get raw and you just say, okay, I'm going to be raw and I'm going to be honest and I'm going to tell my truth and fuck it. That's the only way I can make art. And I think that's, isn't that the point of art, is to save our fucking souls? So yeah, that's what the fuck I do.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I feel it, not just in this conversation, but in the work that you put out there. I mean, people feel it. That's why there's a magnetism about it, because it's so real and raw. And I mean, I know, well, I want to go back to what you said about being labeled as sensitive, because I was also that. I remember my parents saying, like, quit being so sensitive, you know? And it's so unfortunate that that isn't allowed to be expressed or accepted very much, or hasn't previously, because I look at that as a superpower. To me, that means you're attuned to life. You're in touch with maybe the human experience, or plants or animals, or just living fully. And that's the real gift in, like, allowing yourself to feel to the depths with which you do. And then you take that and turn it into something to communicate to other people the depth of that feeling. That's at least the way that I perceive it.
A boy, a man, a sensitive boy or a sensitive man. In the early part of my life, that was considered a weakness. You know, the only emotion that a man was allowed to have when I was growing up was anger. You know, my father, I remember he was ashamed of crying about a friend that died. He did not want to reveal that he was feeling emotions, and he wanted everybody else to buck up. But rage or anger was what he learned and what he taught me. And anger's okay, it shows strength. When really, it's just a terrible wall of hiding all the other shit. And it's something that I think men have to fight, that, because it's a learned, it's the acceptable emotion. And then to feel all the other shit. And I guess by owning being an artist, by saying, hey, wait a minute, I'm no longer, you know, because when I was a cabinet maker, and I'd go to like a job site and all the men with hard hats on and stuff like that, you know, you understood what masculinity was all about. But in the artist world, it's okay for me to be sensitive, and it's okay for me to be emotional and vulnerable, because it's good to be sensitive there. So it just was a safe place for me to find all that, to be sensitive, to own the sensitivity, was within the art world, by labeling myself, hey, I'm an artist, I'm allowed to be emotional. And so just part of owning who I was. And so it came, yeah, it just makes it come easier.
Hmm. Gosh, what you just touched on is something that I have an awareness of, and I feel pretty passionate about, is this reality in our society where men are disallowed to feel much beyond just anger and rage. And I think that a lot of what you're doing through your artwork is definitely giving people in general permission to feel. But I think you're modeling to men that, or maybe creating this sort of emotional safety to men to be allowed to express more beyond just that. And I think we need that so badly. We need that permission to feel the full spectrum I mean, we all do, but specifically men, with all the repression and the suppression of every other color, of every emotion.
I think, as there's more awareness and talking about that, and as men become to be aware of all their sensitivities and their feelings and all of them, hopefully things get better. And it's not always, not everything's met with aggression and anger and rage all the time. Maybe we can, nonviolent communication and just being loving and kind. And it's not, and eventually even get away from all the gender stuff. It's just human beings have to love each other, because that's what the fuck we're here for. We're not here to give each other cruel pain all the time, or rage or revenge or ego or a bunch of other bullshit. In the end, we all want, you know, I want my little inner boy to be held gently. That doesn't happen when he's angry. He gets held when he's sensitive. And that's really, you know, the bottom fucking line is we all just want to be loved. And rage is an anger is just a wall to try not to admit that out loud.
Wow. Well, I just had like this little insight as you're talking, because one of the things that I feel like since I've met you that I've allowed myself to express is rage and anger. Typically, my MO as a sort of recovering people pleaser is to be the nice one, to please, to be empathic and compassionate. And that's all wonderful. But I've disallowed the full spectrum of maybe there's anger and rage beneath the surface. And so finding that feeling and then sort of channeling it in maybe an artistic way or through words has been so healing for me. So I was just like noticing that as you're talking about the average male's experience is more on the side of anger and rage. I would say conversely, the average female's experience is to suppress that and to be the nice, pleasing one. And this isn't black or white, but kind of in general. And so like, is there a way we can take both sides and learn from each other, right? Because that that expression of rage for me has been so enlightening. It's actually allowed me to feel more, which I think is what you're in the business of doing or teaching. And it's, on one hand, it feels so vulnerable, kind of scary to allow yourself to feel these other emotions that you haven't for maybe your whole life. But on the other hand, it's like, that is the fullness, more of the fullness of this experience of being human. So anyways, I was just kind of noticing, like going beyond genders, absolutely. But also we have sort of this contrast that I can witness and see how they're sort of polarized in a certain way. And I don't know, I'm just thinking like, how can we bridge those gaps and just allow all of it, right? For men to have the sensitivities.
Yeah. We need obviously a lot better communication skills. And then we need to create safe places for each other. You know, a man needs to create a safe place for a woman to express rage. And a woman needs to create a safe place for a man to cry. And again, this is not all general. Lots of relationships work that way fine and have for a long time. But obviously you do see some of that stereotypical roles coming out. But it's about being safe in both ways. And the German philosopher Rilke says, feel all of it. Feel all of it. And I do think that's the essence of being a human being too, is to feel all of it. Not to like polish it and channel it and say, well, I'm only going to feel happiness, or I'm going to only feel this. No, you want to feel fucking all of it. And I've learned to let that happen in my artwork. My artwork can be really diverse because, you know, I've got layers, and I'm not just saying one sentence when I make all my artwork. I'm saying layers and layers and layers of paragraphs and books inside me saying, I have all these fucking emotions and they make me a fucking human being. And then that's the meaning, right? And Joseph Campbell says that. The meaning is the experience. And the human experience is feeling shit. Mm. Whether you're scared or content or blissful or whatever that all that is, it makes you a fucking human being. Mm. And I guess that's just me and my artwork. I'm trying to make some fucking sense of all that by just saying it out loud and then seeing the feedback and going, yeah, I think I... Sometimes in my real vulnerable work, I get messages, especially from teenagers, saying thanks. Shit, I didn't know I could make artwork that could express those emotions, that could be vulnerable, or could just be confused, or fucked up, or broken. And for me, that's one of the that's a closure of the circle for me in my own healing, is when I can reach another human being to say, yeah, we get what you're saying. It means something that you can say that fucking shit out loud, and now maybe other artists can say shit out loud, or maybe just anybody can say it out loud, that life sucks sometimes. Love stinks. It hurts like fucking hell. What the fuck? Let's say that out loud once in a while. and maybe we can at least feel not so afraid or not so alone in that just being so perplexed, you know? This wasn't the shit that we were taught. This is just all of a sudden, fuck, yeah, life sucks. It's okay to admit it out loud. Mm-hmm. But then there's also the other side of that. There's this incredible beauty within all that darkness. And when you peel away the layers, you put some light on it, you go, fuck. This is so many more layers of beauty than I've ever seen or imagined. But you got to get the fuck off the couch. You got to turn off the fucking TV and you got to go fucking feel shit. You know, the bucket list doesn't have to be, you know, Kathmandu. The bucket list could be taking a chance of falling in fucking love. Or feeling sad about shitty things. That's the fucking bucket list. And when you put that in the fucking artwork, for me, it just comes out, and I don't have any blocks, because it's just, I just opened up all those heart valves and just let the fucking shit pour.
Hmm. Oh my gosh, I'm over here smiling because it's everything that you say, I think, is so true. You know, like, when you allow or acknowledge the pain, the hardship, the real, you're also, I think, opening up to more of the beauty, the joy, the bliss. And again, that comes back to the full spectrum of a human experience. And I don't know. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that at times it can be overwhelming to open yourself up like that, to be that level of vulnerable. And at the same time, it can be liberating. And yeah.
So the turning point in my artwork was, I was going through some shitty stuff 10 or 12 years ago, and I finally needed to do something. I took up pottery. I took a pottery class with a wheel and throwing clay on a wheel. And just the act of centering the clay and being present in that moment, I began to feel a flow of just my emotions starting to come out. And so I made some pretty, you know, I learned pottery for a couple of years. Actually, I had a teacher told me to quit taking classes. I just kind of learned it on my own. But, and then I was looking at all this nice pottery, but okay, it really wasn't fixing the broken in me. And I had read about Kintsugi, which is the Japanese art form of repairing broken pottery, but they do it with lacquer and gold, and they do it very pretty, very nice seams. You know, they celebrate the broken, but they celebrate it very elegantly and beautifully. And I thought, no, fuck. Broken's not pretty and eloquent. Broken is ugly and imperfect as fuck. So I had made stained glass windows in my 20s and copper foil and solder. I knew all those techniques. So One day, I thought I gotta go more. I'm not there yet. And I took a really beautiful bowl of mine and I put it in a towel and I took a wrench and banged on the bottom of it and broke it in pieces. And then I wrapped all the edges with copper foil and then I soldered it back together. But I left pieces out and I sloppy solder joints and I repaired some of it with sticks. And I went, fuck, this, I gotta fucking heal. I got so much broken in me. And then it just went from there. And when I began to deal with my brokenness through the artwork, not only did I heal, I finally became what I wanted my whole life. I became an artist. I mean, I finally have gotten over the fucking imposter syndrome. Like, I think I might be an artist because I'm, but it didn't happen until I had the, I didn't have a choice. Just, I had to do something with the broken and to do it in a really raw and emotional way. And then I began to make, it just became a thing and I made more and more pottery and I broke more and more of my own pottery and I mended it in so many different ways. And then in the pandemic, I couldn't go to the pottery studio. So I had a box of my maternal grandmother's china, kind of classic American china from the 1940s. And I thought, what the fuck? I can't make pottery. So I began to break that. And I found that incredibly healing, especially from a lot of the pain from my mother and the pain that she got from her mother and father. And who, it was all generational pain. And so by mending that, I began to mend. So every time I just went down these roads of mending pottery or dishes, I mended myself in surprising ways. And then I began to get responses like, people got it, like, oh fuck, I get this. You're mending the broken. And it's sloppy and it's fucked up and it doesn't seem to always make sense. But then within all that fucking garbage, there's a certain poetry and eloquence out of that even. So what the fuck are we talking about? I'm sorry, I'm on a tangent.
No, we were, I can't remember how we got there, but it's great. I'm just kind of like thinking, you know, how your artwork, it's explicit in a way. I mean, even just the words that you use, the images, the edginess, it's explicit, but it's so real and people connect to that. Like, that's why you have this certain following, I think, is because people, you're not hiding behind anything, right? You're just putting it all on the table, which I personally think is courage, right? To not just choose this authentic life that you said, I am an artist and I'm going to do it. So there's that, but then you're explicitly, vulnerably sharing it with the world and it's inspiring. It just is. And people see themselves in that. It gives them permission to maybe open up and express more. I know that's been true for me.
Yeah. I knew that from studying art history. I'm definitely a student of art history. You've got to break new ground. You've got to go forward. You can't just keep saying the same shit. You got to go in places that somebody hasn't been before. You can call it courage or you can just say it's the great, I don't give a fuck, but you've got to, for art, you've got to be kind of, mindfully reckless, embrace the chaos and the stupidity of all this shit and get down to the fucking point of a lot of stuff without, don't polish it so much, you know, keep it raw and see what the fuck happens. And I always make a piece knowing in the back of my mind that this probably isn't going to work and I'm going to go throw it in a dumpster. And then it just frees me to not give a fuck. And I get to a place in my heart and in my brain that just says, fuck this, and things happen. And yeah, don't over fucking think it so much. You know, there's a Zen master that says, get stupid fast. which means just unthink. You got to feel it. And you got to, if you analyze shit, if you analyze shit too much, you're going to analyze it to boredom and you're going to analyze the truth out of it. So I try to keep it just, yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Well, I love that. And, you know, too, as you're talking, I'm thinking, okay, this is real. We're talking a lot about pain, vulnerability, hard stuff. I want to know your thoughts on like how you see that connecting to pleasure or maybe another way to frame that is like, where's the lightness, the levity? I know you alluded to bliss earlier or like this sort of full spectrum experience, but what about that side?
I do have some playful pieces for my amusement, but oh, God damn.
Should we just stay in the dark?
Well, okay. Well, we talked about this last week, though. We had a conversation about that, and I told you that at some point, there are times or there are days, and when I have a little bit of, you know, I get triggered about something I'm angry about, and I decide that I'm going to make some art about it, and I'll play some angry music, and I'll just kind of stay in that place, and let my neurons and my brain just kind of go down a certain path, and it's based maybe in frustration of being a human being, it's based in hurt, it's based in anger, and there's a dark pleasure from that. There's a whole bunch of shit going on in there that I'm not trying to get away from it. I'm drawn to that. And yeah, so is that a dark pleasure? I don't fucking know. And then there is a pleasure in walking towards the edge, you know? There's a pleasure in making things that are you know, maybe dark, maybe sexual, maybe painful about love. The edge is very pleasurable in creativity. I guess I walk really, you know, and sometimes I jump the fuck off the edge, but taking it to some sort of mindful edge where you're just pushing the limits of the topics and maybe even the taboo, there's a lot of pleasure from that adventure, that exploration. And that, I guess that brings me a lot of creative pleasure. When I can take my stuff closer to the fucking edge and push it. You know, I know sometimes there's pieces that I make that I find incredibly edgy and nobody else gets it. And that's fine. And I have my own little secret happiness about it. But yeah, the edge of emotions, the edge of creativity is very exhilarating and a certain quiet ecstasy that, don't tell anybody. It's a secret.
Well, we just told everybody. Shit. Okay. Oh, I agree. I mean, I personally too I take some pleasure in talking about taboo topics as well. Exploring that. I think for me, it's about, there's a liberation that comes. I think a lot of taboo things are shrouded in shame. Mm-hmm. And when you bring it into the light, you essentially deconstruct that, I think, or it gets released. And I kind of hear that same thread in what you're saying is like, there's an exhilaration of being that real, raw, just going all in a way with whatever you're expressing emotionally or artistically. And yeah, just being exposed, I guess, in a way. Is that a better way to put it? Or isn't that how you would you equate that to vulnerability? Like you allowing yourself to be open and
I guess that's another taboo is just to be that vulnerable. So maybe being vulnerable is the taboo that's most tempting. And to be raw about some things that really fucking poke you in the heart. You know, because each person's got, we all have those triggers. We all have those things that, God, I can't go there. I'm not going to think about that. I'm not going to feel that. And then to go poke at that and to go pull down the curtain and say, fuck, here it is. It fucking hurts like hell. But guess what? I'm talking out loud about it and I'm making a piece of art about it. I do. So some of my work has spools of thread in it. Growing up, my mother struggled with mental health issues, and I really never had any connection to her, eye contact, hugs, words of affirmation, any of that shit. But I do remember playing on the floor with the button box and the spools of thread that had she had sitting around to mend our clothes. And there was a certain, that was the closest I came to a good feeling when I was a little boy. And so for me, when I put buttons and spools of thread in my artwork, it digs into a really hard fucking darkness. And it hurts like fucking hell, and it won't go away. It just keeps fucking hurting. But I keep going there. Later on, I used to go out in the garage, and my dad was at work, and my mom was in the house, and I'd fart around with, I don't know, whatever, pieces of wood and tools and stuff like that. And so when I put, like, hammers into my work, that relates to my dad. Some really hard shit that hurt and still hurts. I still feel that hammer. And so to wander into that darkness that I should have just, you know, and I did block off for a long time, but to wander in there and to mine it for artwork and to mine it for, I don't know about healing, maybe just being okay. Maybe that's all I ever fucking do is just, I don't know about healing. All I know is I want to be okay. And so I keep going into that dark shit that's just, it makes me bleed, and then it's okay. And then once I feel it and I own it in that creative process, I can put it down for a while. And then if somebody else gets the artwork and they understand it or they buy the artwork and respond to that, then I heal just a little bit more. But I'm going to keep coming back to it because I've given up. It's going to keep it there. So all I can do is try to make it okay.
I think I just found the connection between the pain, pleasure. Well, and this maybe isn't like new news to you, but if you think about what you're doing, you're taking the pain, you're creating, processing it through, you're alchemizing it into something else, which I think does produce the healing or just okayness, whatever you want to call it. And I know from my experience and what I witness in other people, when you get to that place, that's when you experience more pleasure, when you get to healing, wholeness, integrity. And it opens up another level of life that you were previously cut off to because you were trapped in your own pain, or you resisted it, or you were not able to accept it and work through it. So it frees you, but then it allows for, I think, the other side of the the spectrum to be able to be experienced. That's how I would articulate it.
It reminds me of an old, I think it might have been an old Three Stooges joke. Why do you keep hitting yourself in the head with a hammer? Because it feels so good when I stop. So is that are you saying
something? I mean, I don't know what I'm saying. I know.
Contrast. And yeah. Expansion. And that, we've talked about that too. The expansion of the heart. The more, the heart is a muscle. And the bigger you make that muscle stretch, the more you can feel with the heart. And so the more you feel with pain, the more you can feel with pleasure and happiness and bliss and joy. If you don't exercise the heart into the darkness, you're not going to exercise the heart into pleasure and happiness.
Yeah.
It's about expanding and pulling open those wounds to let it shred and become bigger and larger to feel even fucking more. So how, mm-hmm. yeah, you, and so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yes. And this is what I think collectively in our society, we really struggle to do is, for example, grieve. A lot of people don't know how to grieve. They don't know how to let go. They don't know what to do with their feelings. They don't know how to name them. They don't even have language for them to even make sense of what they're experiencing. So by allowing that process of feeling, it releases you. It releases you from more of that pain.
Yeah.
And then you get to feel
yeah.
the pleasure on the other side.
Yeah.
But I just, there's so much suppression, or we are engaged yeah. in all these activities, addictive activities
yeah.
to numb us and distract us right. from the feelings. But right. actually, if you go toward them,
yeah.
if you dive fully deeply into them, which is what you're doing in your work, then you get the gold on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah. Within all that, right. Within every problem is a gift. Within all that pain are these treasures. And yeah, you've got to, you know, and you got to label it. You got to be aware of it. You got to talk about it. Then you got to manifest it into something. You've got to just carry it. You got to accept it that it's going to sneak up on you. You got to feel that shit. And then it's not going to weigh you down. You know, it's mm-hmm. the elephant in the room kind of shit. It's like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, it's right fucking there. Why don't I acknowledge it? And then I feel it and own it. And then you begin to breathe again. Yeah. And it makes you more of a fucking human being mm-hmm. instead of just some sort of
robot.
Couch potato, lump, medicated, over-medicated, distracted, whatever the fuck it is. Mm-hmm. I think, right. I mean, isn't just, yeah, we want to become more human.
Mm-hmm.
And that involves the fucking mirror. Mm-hmm. And if you look in the fucking mirror, that's the bravest fucking thing you'll ever do, is look in the mirror
mm-hmm.
yeah, and see all the fucking shit inside of yourself.
Mm. Wow. I'm asking myself, how do we tie this conversation up in a neat little bow?
Oh, don't what do that. Don't do that.
Well, no, not in a neat bow.
Life doesn't get that way. No. That's our point. I hate nice bows.
Well, maybe more I'm asking, like, what is the overarching theme here? And what I'm sensing is, like, it has to do with, you said it earlier, that love is at the core of this. And we're all trying to find ways to be loved, to express it, to overcome our fears, to work through the pains of not having received it as children.
Mm.
And that's really
yeah.
it. That the it, whole that is core it. Of our...
We all want to just be loved.
Yeah.
And that's why we're here. That's the meaning of it. So...
Mm. Yeah. And I, you know, even like the sort of premise of this podcast is about connection, which I think another layer down from that is love. Like, we all just want to feel that connection and love to ourselves, to each other, to our place in this cosmos. But you are doing it. You're putting it out there to the world, and it's really inspiring. So...
Thank you.
I'm grateful for your vulnerability and willingness to go to the edge.
I don't have a choice.
I know you say that, but I think you do.
No, I don't. No, I seriously don't.
Oh, no. Gosh. Well, let me ask you the last two questions I like to ask all my guests, which is the first one, what are you up to lately that has you excited?
Okay, so... I have a Ukrainian woman contacted me about the war, and she had this idea. She followed my artwork, and she saw what I did as far as mending pottery, and she suggested that, what if they gathered broken pottery from Ukrainian villages and houses and schools and sent me the broken pieces, and if I made artwork out of it? And of course I said yes, and I have strong feelings about all that, and yes. So, and I've actually spent time with, her name's Ina, and I've spent time with her family, and I've gotten to know them, and I have a very personal connection now, and there's a woman named Lala who's on the eastern front of Ukraine who does animal rescue, who has taken time and basically risked her life to get broken pottery, and they've sent me a box, and so I've been making artwork for this project, and I think they're going to send me another box soon. And eventually, when I get enough artwork made from that, we're going to try to find some exhibition spaces in the United States, in Europe, and maybe eventually in Kiev when the war's over. So I'm pretty involved in that work.
Hmm. When do we get to see it? Is it a while out still?
Yeah, I'm not going to post any online. We're going to, yeah. Oh. And we hope to do maybe 3 or 4 cities in the United States. And then I know we're going to do Barcelona and maybe some cities in Europe. So... and it may run a couple of years, but they're working on getting the, you know, we're working on all that paperwork and all that. But yeah, in the meantime, I kind of have to listen to the news. I talk to Ina frequently and am aware of the war. So, but we'll see. I hope the war's over soon. Yeah. That would be nice.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Some redemptive work you're doing there. So.
Yeah, it feels bigger than myself, which is very healthy, I think, for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, second question, where, if people want to learn more about you, where can they find your artwork or content and all of it?
The best place is Instagram, under Glenn Martin Taylor. That's probably the best way to see all my current work and my current writing and everything I'm doing is Instagram, Glenn Martin Taylor.
Okay. Well, I will link that in the show notes so that other people can find you.
And it's Glenn with one N.
Oh, one N, people. Well, Glenn, thank you so much for having this conversation today and just, I think, opening us up to more of the human experience, you know, to a world of emotions and expression and the vulnerability that comes with that, but then also the connection that is the result. I think you win the award for the most fucks listed in a podcast interview, so high five on that one. No, it feels true to you and your brand, and I mean that in a complimentary way. It's just like real, explicit, and yeah. Fully human, so... thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. Well, everyone, I invite you to check out Glenn on his Instagram. And I thank you for taking the time to tune into this episode. And until next time, I encourage you to tap into your emotions, your vulnerability, and see if you can find a way to creatively express it with the world. Thank you for joining me and listening to Clearly Connected. And now, my one question for you. Are you ready to experience the transformative money magic on the other side of powerful questions and one-to-one coaching to help you break up with your relationship with money stress so you can feel a sense of security and create a lasting legacy? If so, let's talk. Book a free coaching consultation with the link in the podcast show notes to talk about what it would look like to work together and how I can help you save, invest, and make more money doing what you love. And if you enjoy this podcast, I'd be ever so grateful if you shared a review. As a thank you for your feedback, I'll be picking one listener who leaves a review every month to win a one-to-one free coaching session.